Welcome, folks. This is another episode of Non-Binaries. I'm Lucy.
I'm Max.
We've got a bunch of interesting stuff for y'all today.
Yes. The internet's burning down.
I think last time we suggested that we were going to do a thing about like sustainability and environmentalism, but
Yeah.
something big came up. There's a lot of stuff going on when it comes to DMCA, which is the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And it was just so much going on at once that we couldn't not take care of it.
Yeah, it's been a big fucking mess. We touched bases on YouTube DL getting taken down from like circumventing protection that allowed people to download copyrighted material, which is like total bullshit.
But we're gonna get into that in our second segment. But
Yeah.
first, we're gonna do our little news roundup that we usually do.
When I was reading this one, I was like, just fucking appalled, dude.
So this one is how the U.S. military buys location data from ordinary apps. This is from Motherboard from Vice. This one's written by Joseph Cox, one of the best writers kind of in the tech space, in my opinion.
Yeah, like how they wrote.
You want to give us an overview of this?
So basically, there are a few like companies out there that in different ways are tracking like really granular data from users, like location data, like where you are physically on Earth. And through their partners, who are like contractors, they're contractors with the US military. So through extension, a bunch of like the US military is getting a bunch of fucking data on people from these random ass companies.
So the company in particular that this article focused on is called Babel Street, and the product that the United States military was getting this data from is called Locate X.
Yeah.
So, and then there's another stream of data coming from a company called X Mode. So what these products do is they are like data brokers for that work between apps and people who want the data, which is usually advertisers. So Max, I think you can think of the implications of the military buying location data from apps, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of fucking really scary things that come to mind.
It's been reported previously that the military has used cell phone signals to track targets for drone strikes, oftentimes with collateral damage. And in this case, some of the apps in particular are ones that are probably going to be popular in the Middle East, where a lot of clandestine military activity happens. So a lot of the popular ones were like specifically for Muslims.
Yeah, which that was like that kind of bugged me.
It bugs me a lot too, because that particular bit here makes it to where this really vulnerable group of people can be very specifically targeted.
Yeah, that's scary.
So one of them was Muslim Pro, which was an app that reminded users when to pray and what direction to face. If you don't already know, in Muslim tradition, you pray towards Mecca. So that's why an app like this would be so useful. Cool fact, there are airplanes run by, or in certain Middle Eastern airlines, they'll have a thing on the entertainment system in flights to tell you which direction to face as well. So
That's cool.
this is really important. So you could really easily target Muslims by buying location data for this app,
Yeah, it's
which is disgusting. There was also some other ones that weren't that specific. So, for example, there was a Craigslist app that was included in this as well.
Which, yeah, I mean, I guess it makes sense that they're, like, have that kind of information, but selling it to people is just shitty.
Another thing that we should probably say is that, like, these apps aren't necessarily, like, providing, hey, this person is at this location sort of data. It's supposed to be anonymized. But the thing is with data anonymization, it's very common to be able to de-anonymize that data.
Oh, yeah. They even said in the article that they could do that.
Yeah, so there's a quote here that says that Babel Street employees would play with it to de-anonymize someone.
That's scary.
Yeah.
The whole idea of, like, collecting data, like, such, like, personal data, like, where you fucking are on Earth is just really scummy.
Yeah.
In any context.
There's practical ways to defend yourself against this. For example, whenever you use an app, you should be very picky about what gets to have your location data. Mm-hmm. But even then, for example, with the one where it tells you where to face Mecca from, it's going to need that location data, I would think. So that makes it not so straightforward.
Yeah. I mean, and the issue with that is, like, you can't even say, like, go use another app that doesn't sell your data, because
how are you going to know?
Yeah. You know, how are you going to know? And I don't know what the market is for that kind of thing specifically. Like,
well, for the one for facing Mecca, there are more than a handful of apps for it because it's such an important tool. Though I would imagine that perhaps it might be a good workaround would be to, like, use the compass on your phone.
Yeah, that's
though that's not nearly as user friendly as, hey, point this way. Mm-hmm. Because you don't have to, like, look at a map or anything.
Yeah.
And we've been seeing a lot of concern in the mobile phone space recently about privacy when it comes to what data your apps grab from you. And I think this is just another glaring example of some of the bad shit that can happen whenever your data is harvested and sold.
Yeah, like,
and this is big money too. It says that for X mode, an app with 50,000 daily users will get $1,500 a month for selling this data.
Yeah, it's enticing in some ways, but just plain up fucking gross.
Yeah.
What was it? I remember reading a Reddit comment like a month or two ago about another app that was like really fucking spyware shit. I think it was TikTok. Someone like reverse engineered the app on Android and saw what they were fucking doing. And it's just scary shit.
I remember there was also a thing with TikTok, like looking at your clipboard without telling you, that people were concerned about. Though I don't think it's quite as egregious as the location harvesting that we're seeing here.
Yeah, yeah. That's definitely a fine line between your porn clipboard and a location on Earth.
Yeah. And then on top of this isn't the only way that they can get location data. Most phones will report, like, what Wi-Fi network you're connected to a central server to help aid, like, location data. So if you connect to a Wi-Fi hotspot, you can reliably tell what building someone's in based on that. If you're able to get that information.
I guess if they're able to get, like, if they're getting able to get, like, Wi-Fi information, like what network you're on, they're probably able to get your IP too.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that of course can be obfuscated through a VPN, but
yeah, yeah.
Perhaps we should move on to the next thing.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So this one's from Torrent Freak. Love them. This one is popular pirate sites disappear from DuckDuckGo's top search results. For those not in the know, DuckDuckGo is a privacy-centric search engine. I'm not actually sure how they make money because I've never seen an ad on DuckDuckGo.
Yeah, I don't know.
Then again, also, I have an ad block on, so how would I know?
Yeah.
So DuckDuckGo has a big thing about being privacy-oriented. It doesn't like have trackers for advertisers. It doesn't filter your results based on data they've gathered on you like Google does. And the thing is, if you ever look through torrents or look for torrents on a Google search engine, you'll get like a little notification that a bunch of results have been taken down, usually due to copyright claims. So that wasn't the case with DuckDuckGo, but now it seems that they're starting to take them down.
Yeah. I mean, my immediate thought with this is like, this sucks. Fuck this. But also, who's using a search engine like DuckDuckGo to find torrents?
I assume someone who doesn't know better.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably a good point. Someone getting into it.
Yeah. Which, I mean, that sucks because, like, that helps people find where the torrents are. Because that's not, like, a non-obvious thing.
Yeah. And, like, it's even harder now because they're really... I saw that they're, instead of showing them, like, prominent sites, they're showing the fake ones that are, like, trying to cash in on these big torrent sites.
In some cases, it's just, like, proxies or mirrors, which is not that bad, but still. It could inadvertently push someone to an illegitimate website that's used to, like, launch spyware or something.
Yeah.
It's not exactly clear why this is happening. They never got a response out of DuckDuckGo to figure that out. So there's no telling, but also it's kind of discouraging.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I haven't really used DuckDuckGo personally, but I've always kind of regarded them as better than other search engines. So this is kind of, it sucks to see them go this way.
Yeah. It personally hasn't impacted me very much. Like, I use DuckDuckGo as my default on all my devices.
Mm-hmm.
And it works just about the same as ever. Right. But, like, if I'm ever looking for a torrent, I know where to go.
Yeah, of course. I'm sure you're very experienced with torrenting.
Yeah. Shall we move on to the next thing? This is, this maybe should have been our immediate follow-up to the privacy thing, because this is very related.
Yeah, I saw this and was like, this isn't surprising.
Okay, you wanna tell us what's that?
Yeah, so Apple's iOS ad tracking is targeted by a European privacy campaigner. So, someone that shares the same name as me, Max Schrems?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a privacy campaigner? I've never heard of them. That they've gone after someone called the US-EU Privacy Shield and Facebook. And so now they're trying to go after Apple because apparently the iPhone's use of IDFA, which is Identifier for Advertisers, is unlawful, according to them.
So IDFA is a little like, it's like a browser cookie. So it's like a tracking ID for you whenever you use iOS. So this is used for targeted advertising within apps.
Right. Okay.
Android has a very similar thing. I don't remember what it's called. I think it might just be advertiser ID in Android. The thing is, this is on by default. It is not opt-in, which, according to Schrems, this ought to be opt-in. Which I think Schrems is correct when it comes to EU law that this has to be opt-in.
Right. The EU has more stricter laws regarding this kind of stuff than we do.
Right. After I read this, I was intensely curious. I actually went into my iPhone and found that, yes, it is on by default. It never asked me about this.
That's not cool.
It's really odd because iOS makes you confirm like every single little permission that an app is allowed to access.
Right.
So finding out that this was turned on by default, especially when Apple has been campaigning on like a really privacy-centric system, was very surprising to me.
I wasn't aware that Apple's doing that.
Yeah.
What are they doing for that?
So this is just like a system that apps can use to track users between apps for the purposes of advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And Google has the same thing. I bet. Max, do you actually want to try a little experiment here with us?
Sure.
I want you to go into the settings of your Android phone, and I want you to see if you can find the targeted advertising token setting. I'm going to look it up real quick to help you find it.
Yeah, sure. Let me look. I'm a big idiot. Okay, I found my advertising ID.
Okay. Okay. So this is going to be after the edit. You found your advertiser ID. Did you know that this was on?
No.
Okay. Does it?
Oh, fuck, no.
Does it give you the option to turn it off?
Yeah, but I have to... It's very strange. I have to enable opting out of it. It's not just something I can...
So you have to enable opting out of it before you can opt out of it?
No, but I mean, I have to press... Like, I have to turn on a setting that says opt out of interest.
Ah, okay.
Based ads.
So you had no idea this was on.
No, I didn't. That's... don't like that.
And you were never asked permission.
Not that I can recall, no.
See, that's the whole thing. And see, if you lived in the EU, they would have had to ask you first.
Hmm.
So how does that make, how does that make you feel knowing that, like, this has been on the whole time without your knowledge?
I mean, it's not entirely surprising because of the stuff I'm shown on ads, mm-hmm. but it's kind of concerning that they just have it on anyways.
Right. So, surprise. So if you have a smartphone, you might want to consider turning these things off.
Yep. Or Google knows everything about you.
Yeah.
I mean, they already do, but.
But you can make it a little less worse.
Yeah.
Or just quit using Google stuff. I mean, that's very difficult, but.
Especially if you're on Android.
Yeah. How about some good news, though?
Yes, please.
Okay, so Bandcamp is now doing ticketed live streams.
I saw this. This is exciting. Like, nothing will replace live concerts, but this is really cool.
Yeah. So, do you use Bandcamp very often at all?
I use it a very minuscule amount to listen to Dylan's music.
That's fair. So for people who are like super into music, they're used to using this website to buy music and merch.
Right.
So for example, like there are multiple bands that I've listened to that like just don't exist anymore. And I've gotten their music off of Bandcamp when they still like existed.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
but also there's like smaller artists that I've supported on Bandcamp before. This is like, it's like the platform for music.
Right. Yeah. Especially like smaller people too.
And the thing is that a lot of artists will make, a lot of their money off of events rather than, merch and music sales.
Mm-hmm.
Well, merch helps more so, but like music, usually there's not like a great margin on it.
Right.
It's definitely better whenever you're direct selling through Bandcamp, of course. Mm-hmm. But if you can't go out and do shows, you're missing out on a lot of income, and you're also missing out on a lot of exposure that you get through doing shows.
Yeah, so this is a good thing.
Yeah, this is definitely really good. So, of course, Bandcamp takes a little money off the top whenever they do this. However, you can set your price to whatever you want, and they are taking a 10% fee that they're waiving until March 31st of next year.
Yeah, so Bandcamp is cool.
Yeah. They've also been doing Bandcamp Fridays where one Friday each month they just waive their revenue share. So yeah, they've just been out here doing the most for artists.
Honestly, yeah. Like, COVID happened and they really stepped up.
Yeah.
And you love to see it.
We do love to see it. I think the only way that Bandcamp could be better if it were, like, a cooperative owned by artists, but I don't know how well that would work whenever there's just so many people on it.
Yeah, there's a lot of people on it.
Yeah, but the model is very good, and them coming up with this in a way that's like really easy to use is just, you know, amazing.
Right. Yeah. So it's like integrated right into Bandcamp, isn't it?
Yeah. So everyone already has a Bandcamp account, and this is just like right there for you to use.
Hell yeah.
They also have some live streams that are already set up that are ready for people to view get ready to view. So like I'm looking at the list of upcoming streams right now, and there's a couple of names I recognize, like Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah, and Cloud Nothings.
Oh, yeah. I recognize none of these people. But,
To be fair, I only recognize, like, three, and that's because they used to send music to my office.
Huh.
But, yeah, we love to see it. Bandcamp is really out here doing the most for musicians in this time. Like, I cannot think of any other business. Even the government's not supporting musicians as much as Bandcamp is.
Government's not supporting anyone as much as Bandcamp is.
Yeah. So shout out to Bandcamp. Just go and see if one of your favorite artists is doing a concert and maybe go see it.
Or just buy their music.
Yeah, that's always that's the best way to support a musician, just buy their fucking music.
Hell yeah.
Okay. So now I think we should get into we've got one more thing. Twitch ads. We're doing this again.
Kinda.
So last time whenever we were doing Twitch ads, they were messing with ad block. What's the deal this time though?
This time they're taking it a step further. They're introducing the worst gimmick in the world called multiplayer ads.
So how does this work?
I'll be honest, I don't know. Their marketing is so stupid. I don't understand it. But my guess is, like, from their, it just looks like polls or surveys you take. And I figure people also watching take them too.
So what it is people have an ad that they vote on. And it counts towards disabling pre-roll ads. So those are the ads that you get before a stream starts. And it also gives bits, which is like a tip currency, to the creator based on how many people interact with the poll. So the example that they have is it's an ad for Twitch gift cards, and it asks you to pick your favorite design.
It's so stupid.
So this kind of reminds me of some of the old banner ads that you would see in the mid-2000s. And I remember one specifically for the T-Mobile Sidekick. And it was like, what's your favorite way to find something in a dark room? And it's like, use a flashlight, nothing, or use the glow of my T-Mobile Sidekick.
Yeah, I kind of get that vibe from this.
Yeah. I don't know how well this is going to work. And I don't even know how advertisers are going to feel about this.
I don't know. I mean, like, I know on a personal level, I hate this because, I mean, ads suck, but at least they're somewhat just, you can let them go. Dude, this is so intrusive and disrupting. I hate it.
Yeah. I also wonder practically how this is going to work on mobiles and on televisions and if someone's embedding it.
That's a good point, yeah.
I see a lot of problems and nothing good out of this, which is, we love to see that.
Yeah, that's how I see it too. It's going to benefit nobody.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see how quickly this gets dropped.
Hopefully quickly. I mean, honestly, this is kind of like the nail in the coffin for me. I don't want to use Twitch anymore.
Yeah.
They're doing such, like, not only are they doing this, there's all the what we're about to get into.
Yeah. So why don't we get into it?
Yeah, sure. Let's shit on Twitch.
Should we do the Twitch part first, or should we do the GitHub part first? Let's just keep rolling with Twitch.
Yeah, let's go with the bad.
Okay, so the main focus here of our second segment today is going to be about the DMCA, Digital Millennium Copyright Act. You've probably encountered this in some form or another before. So, like, sometimes you'll see a YouTube video be taken down because of a copyright claim. Max, do you know how the DMCA works and what provisions it has for people operating websites?
Fuck no.
That is fine. I will tell you.
Please do.
So the DMCA allows large websites with user-submitted content to operate without having to worry about copyright so long as they follow a few rules.
Okay.
So how it works is if you have a service like YouTube, for example, where people are free to upload stuff wherever they like without it having to be like approved for submission first. That's the crucial thing here. You are entitled to certain copyright infringement protections as a result. So if you're not actively moderating, or I guess I should say, if you're not actively picking what can and cannot be uploaded, or if you're not approving uploads first, I guess is the crucial thing here. You don't have to worry about your users uploading copyrighted content. You don't have to be liable for that so long as you take it down quickly after an infringing work is alerted to you.
Right, okay.
So a DMCA takedown, for example, this is when someone who has the rights to something sends a notice under the provisions of this law to the person operating the website and demand something be taken down because it is infringing.
Right.
This is why usually if you want to get something taken down quickly, using the DMCA is the quickest tool, because if they don't take it down quickly afterward, they open themselves up to a lawsuit.
Right, okay.
There are other parts of the DMCA as well that are important. I think there's a thing in it that has to do with being able to circumvent DRM in certain cases.
Okay, so that kind of ties into later.
Here, I'm gonna... That might be a separate thing. Let me load this up on Simple English Wikipedia. Okay, so actually the DMCA... makes it illegal to produce or distribute technology services or devices intended to circumvent measures to control access to copyrighted works.
Okay.
But I think there are some exceptions. But anyway, you should know that this is a thing that websites use to keep themselves out of trouble for user uploaded content, and you're not supposed to get around DRM for the most part. I think there are some things that are exempted for this. So, for example, if you're making a copy of a DVD for yourself personally, that's A-okay.
Right.
That's probably the best example. So, like, breaking DRM on personal things that you've like purchased a copy of, that's okay. But I think like, say, cracking the DRM on Netflix might not be okay. That's not very clear to me. I probably should have done a little research beforehand, but here we are. So that's the DMCA in a nutshell, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Twitch has been having a moment with their DMCA claims. And I'm sure you could tell us more about that, right?
Yeah, so from my understanding, Twitch has been getting a bunch of like DMC claims sent to them, and they are, a lot of them are bullshit. So, and Twitch being Twitch is not doing anything about it.
Right. There is some of that I understand. Like, there's only so much a website that huge can do to review every single claim, especially whenever there's legal action looming over them. But some of the claims have been pretty egregious, right?
Oh, yeah. For instance, streamer I used to watch was playing Phasmophobia. We talked about that last week. In that game, you have to whisper. He received a DMCA claim for some like Tibetan music, like whispering music, chanting, something like that, from the whispering in his stream. He had the game audio muted. He had everything muted. He was just him whispering into the microphone, and he still got a claim on it. It's just like bullshit like that.
Yeah.
And Twitch isn't doing anything about it. They're just saying, oh, you guys just need to mute your audio. Like, that's their help.
And the thing is that, like, there are a lot of false claims like this. There are certain... I remember somebody's stream got claimed for a song that wasn't there, and it was, like, a Skrillex song.
Yeah.
I
think that was shared in Scrope Gang recently.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so I found the exceptions to that anti-circumvention rule. So you can circumvent digital locks on a device that a person owns to repair them. So you can undo locks on, like, tablets, smartphones, vehicles. Interesting fact here. John Deere tractors, the new ones, actually have anti-repair, like, software on them that you have to circumvent to fix them yourself.
Yeah, I've heard all about that shit. That's bullshit in its own right.
Yeah. So things like that. Things that aren't okay are, like, removing watermarks on photographs, bypassing DRM in order to copy a game or movie. Though I thought that copying, like, a CD or DVD for personal use was okay. I guess that's not super clear.
It's very murky.
Yeah, and that's the DMCA really needs to be updated for the modern day, even though it was made for the modern day of its day.
It came out, what, like, 96?
It's been... That sounds right. 1998. Oh, 98. Yeah. But it's implementing treaties from 96.
Right. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
It's time to update it. And so the thing about it is it's not just for, like, media in the sense, like, music. It's more than that.
Yeah.
That's what I personally forget. Like, you were mentioning video games. That's all under DMCA, correct?
Yes. There are some, like, exceptions that are carved out for, like, preservation, for example. So I know there's been a case of a museum that circumvented the DRM on an MMO to get it running again.
Huh.
Or something to that effect.
Interesting. Cool.
Again, like, the exceptions are very few, and they're very murky, and they're hard to understand.
Right. That seems to be the biggest issue with this all, is no one really has a firm understanding of what the DMCA does.
I'm sure a lot of lawyers.
I mean, yeah.
The thing lawyers with the safe harbor provisions for websites are a lot more clear than the anti-circumvention ones are.
Hmm.
Yeah. But either way, this thing is terribly outdated. It doesn't really take into consideration the rights of consumers. It's just a bad law.
Not at all. Yep. And it's being abused.
Yeah. So moving on from Twitch, we have some good news. YouTube DL's DMCA claim has been overturned by GitHub.
Yeah, GitHub, much like Bandcamp, is stepping up, but in a different
way. Yeah, so what's the deal with GitHub?
So, we talked about it a few weeks ago. YouTube DL got claimed by the RIAA.
That's correct.
Whatever they fucked
up. No, it was the MPAA, I think, actually. One of the two.
Oh, was it? It was someone, and someone with a name I don't understand. Basically, they got claimed, they got DMCA claimed on GitHub. The YouTube DL repo was removed. GitHub, I mean, they had to listen. So, because they didn't want to get in trouble, so they took it down. Recently, the CEO of GitHub came out and said that they reinstated the repository, and they had a blog post, I believe, from someone from the EFF reached out, I think, to GitHub, and explained why this is bullshit and they should reinstate the repository.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the blog post right now. What happened is the organization claimed that YouTube DL was violating the DMCA's provision of anti-circumvention. That was really tenuous at best. And GitHub was trying to help out YouTube DL originally get around that issue. And there was a fork of YouTube DL issue. Oh, my God.
You okay?
Okay, I yanked my earbuds out of my face.
Uh-oh.
Okay? Yeah, I'm fine. Where was I? So, they were helping out the dev of, or one of the devs, I think, get around this issue. And also, there was a thing about the repository showing copyrighted content as, like, an example.
Yeah, it was in one of the unit tests.
So, they first reinstated a fork of YouTube DL after a patch was applied to respond to the allegations of the notice. And that was initially allowed to stay. And then I think they got some information that demonstrated to GitHub's lawyers reasonably enough that the original YouTube DL did not, in fact, violate the prohibition against anti-circumvention.
Right. So, if I may.
Yeah.
From my understanding, what this organization that sent the claim misconstrued that as was they thought YouTube was had some kind of rolling cipher. And so they thought YouTube DL was somehow breaking the cipher to then, like you were saying, circumvent DRM and download content.
Right.
From my understanding and personal experience, what they thought was a cipher was actually just a state string to make sure, like, both parties are who they say they are. Just really...
That sounds right. I'm actually looking at a letter from the EFF right now that I'm going to link to you.
Yeah.
I'm linking that to you. So this is from the EFF.
Oh yeah, the unit test. They apparently they just played like a few seconds of some songs that are copyrighted, and so it was the RIAA.
Yeah,
they claim that shit.
So this has to do with YouTube signature code. So for subset of videos, YouTube employs a mechanism it calls a signature. This is from the EFF letter. So when a user requests certain YouTube videos, YouTube server sends a small JavaScript program to the user's browser embedded in the YouTube player page. That program calculates a number referred to as SIG. I'm reading again from the letter. I'll just say when I'm done quoting it. That number then takes the form of a part of a uniform resource locator, the URL, that the browser sends back to YouTube to request the actual video stream. The mechanism is completely visible to the user simply by viewing the source code of the player page. The video stream is not encrypted, and no secret knowledge is required to access the video stream. So, literally, it's just YouTube running a little JavaScript program to make sure that you're the right person trying to view the video. Yeah. So, for example, I think a good example of this would be if you're trying to view a video that's restricted to, like, certain users, it would verify you this way. Or this would be part of it, to make sure that you're accessing the video stream legitimately.
Yeah. It's nothing encrypted or secret. Yeah.
So, here's another quote. YouTube DL works the same way as a browser. When it encounters the signature mechanism, it reads and interprets the JavaScript program sent by YouTube, derives the signature value, and sends that video back to YouTube to initiate the video stream. YouTube DL contains no password key or other secret knowledge that is required to access YouTube videos. It simply uses the same mechanism that YouTube presents to each and every other user who views a video. We presume that the signature code is what RIAA refers to as a rolling cipher, although YouTube's JavaScript code does not contain this phrase. Regardless of what this mechanism is called, YouTube DL does not circumvent it, as that term is defined in the DMCA, because YouTube provides the means of accessing these videos to anyone who requests them.
Right, so what I'm curious about is, like, are the RIAA just stupid, or... Was this some kind of mal? Like,
this is an intentionally bad read of the law that also uses some precedent from a non-U.S. court, weirdly.
Oh.
So this is a deliberate, or I would say this appears to be a deliberate bad read of what the signature code does. And they actually, when the RIA sent out this DMCA notice, they referenced the Hamburg Regional Court in Germany saying that this was a rolling cipher. And the thing is Germany's ruling on this has like no bearing on the United States. And also the EFF in their own words says that it was wrongly decided.
Yeah.
It says here, the court in that case apparently reasons that since the judge was not familiar with JavaScript, using the signature code was beyond the capabilities of the average user. So Germany is a fuck. But yeah, this wouldn't hold up in a U.S. court, and the RIA thought that they could pull a fast one, and nobody was going to fight against it.
No, yeah, no thanks. GitHub, they said no to that bullshit.
Well, I mean, I'm glad the EFF stood up on this because they have always been the first and foremost when it comes to dealing with abuses of the law against regular old people like you and me.
Yeah. Like, I'm not super familiar with them. I've only learned about them through doing this with you, but they are cool. I like them.
I would strongly recommend just checking out their website and clicking around. They are one of the best nonprofits when it comes to this sort of thing.
Hell yeah. I'll definitely...
Like, do you remember the printer dots thing?
It sounds
so familiar. There was a thing about printer dots where if you looked at a piece of paper that your printer printed out, there was these tiny yellow dots that weren't visible to like the casual eye that left a watermark telling whoever could decode them the make and model of your printer and even when it was printed and a serial number. So the EFF, after this came out, they were able to get a bunch of samples from people and like decode it. And also they also did some Freedom of Information Act requests to figure out that pretty much every printer manufacturer was doing this.
So what's the reasoning to do that then?
So like if someone say printed a ransom letter, you could potentially de-anonymize them.
Oh.
Or something like that. But yeah, they found out that people's printers were telling on them. That sort of stuff.
Okay, that's not
cool. So the EFF has kind of like, anytime that there's been attempts to infringe on the privacy of people through the means of like technology, or make it harder for them to have control of things that they buy or their own data, the EFF's always been there first.
Yeah, right. That's cool. So, they're there for the consumers. Yeah.
One of their founders, interestingly, it says on Wikipedia, is Steve Wozniak.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Hell yeah. Doesn't seem to have a source for that, though. But that seems right. Okay, it looks like Wozniak like donated a bunch of money or something. But yeah, they've always been so, here. They even have like a little guide for people who want to know more about like the privacy that different messaging apps provide. So they'll have like a little guide that shows what's good and what's not. It's called the Secure Messaging Scorecard. My bad.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna look that up.
And it says that they were the original developers of HTTPS Everywhere, the browser extension.
Oh, really?
That's
cool.
So
they're very in favor of like you were saying.
Yeah. So they're not like just a lobbying group. They also kind of put their money where their mouth is. They have lawyers and developers that work on practical things that people need.
I like them for that.
You love to see it. I do love to see it. God.
Yeah, I found that scorecard. This is cool.
So sometimes if I have like some spare money, I will send it to them. They're one of the few nonprofits that I feel like I have no qualms with. like at all.
Awesome, yeah.
Hell yeah. And they've done like things with like Snowden too. They're just all around super duper people. Like recently when, do you remember, I think this might've been the first episode or the one after it, Lindsay Ellis had, DMCA, takedowns against her videos.
Yeah.
EFF was there to help her out.
Hell yeah. So that, yeah, that rules.
Yeah. So, the EFS helped out in this one. And then, GitHub being, extremely Chad, decided that they were going to help out as well.
Yeah, they really stepped up.
So GitHub was super pissed about this because, you know, they're the place for software developers to go. They need to be able to protect them, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And, like, for being owned by Microsoft, this was extremely, like, cool to me. They donated $1 million to a developer defense fund to protect open source devs from unwarranted DMCA claims.
That's, like you're saying, very Chad of them. They're extremely cool. Yeah. They're, God, what else did they do?
They also changed practically how they're going to deal with takedowns. So the particular section of the DMCA that YouTube DL got taken down under is 1201. Every single 1201 takedown claim that's deemed credible is going to be reviewed by technical experts, including, when appropriate, independent specialists retained by GitHub to ensure that the project actually circumvents a technical protection measure as described in the claim. And I'm quoting here from GitHub's blog post. Second, they're also going to have this scrutinized by legal experts. If the claim is ambiguous, they're going to err on the side of the developer, which this is huge to me. This leaves GitHub open to litigation should the claiming party decide to take them to court over it. So they're really putting themselves on the line here if they decide to err on the side of developers.
More power to them, honestly.
In the event that a claim is found to be complete, legal, and technically legitimate by their experts, they're going to contact the repo owner and give them the chance to fix it. That's big.
That really rules.
So, if they don't respond, we'll attempt to contact the repository owner again before taking any further steps. So, already they're doing the most here. So, they're not immediately taking down anything under this section. They are scrutinizing it with multiple experts to make sure that the claims are legitimate. And even then, they don't take it down. They decide to try to fix it first. And only after all of this, which I imagine takes a great deal of time and a lot of effort and a lot of people, only after this will they take down repos.
Hell yeah. That's so cool.
We're not even done. Yeah. After they take down a repository, they're going to continue to try to reach out to the repo owner, if they haven't already responded, in order to try to help them fix the claim and open the repo back up. And they will ensure repository owners can export their issues, pull requests, and all the other data that does not contain the alleged code if it's legally possible.
Holy shit.
And we will staff our trust and safety frontline team to respond to developer tickets in such cases as a top priority so that we can ensure that claims are resolved quickly and repositories are promptly reinstated once claims have been resolved. All this will be done at our own cost and at no cost to the developers who use GitHub. I don't think any other repository service goes this far.
No, definitely not.
I mean, like, GitHub's owned by, like, gigantic corporation Microsoft, who I hate. Fuck them. But I am so glad that the folks who are actually running the operations at GitHub are going this far to ensure that developers have the support they need.
Yeah. They're definitely taking the stand here, and I it's really
good. Yeah. And then, of course, like, setting up the Legal Defense Fund, working with the EFF, we love to see that.
Hell yeah. Like, I'm, like, just awestruck, honestly.
So this is just great news. And I feel like the DMCA is finally getting some long past due scrutiny. as a result of this.
Yeah. All the shit coming out, it's really, they're finally putting it into the light. Hopefully something good comes out of it, more of what GitHub's doing, but...
Well, and I mean, another thing is that this is just United States law. They're also concerned, and they say in this blog post, about the EU copyright directive, where they want mandatory upload filters.
Is that part of the, what is it, GDPR? Or is that something
else? So the GDPR is a different thing. This is from the European Parliament, where they're suggesting that any website where people can upload stuff, it's not enough to do a DMCA style thing where you take down things quickly if they infringe. The EU has been proposing for several years to make it to where you have to have a filter installed on your upload service to filter out infringing content. And the thing is that these generate a bunch of false positives and they don't account for like remixes and that sort of thing.
Yeah, there is that sounds like a terrible idea.
So
there's a lot of issues.
They've been fighting against this. They're really out here doing the most.
And we love them for it.
So I feel like this was a really short episode, but you know, they can't all be long ones. They don't all need to be.
Yeah. It's still a bit about an hour.
What do you think the future is going to be like when it comes to like upload filters and the DMCA and that sort of thing? Do you think things are going to get better or worse? Or
honestly, I don't know. Like at this point in time, I feel like I'm younger, so I've only really been paying attention to this stuff for the last five mm-hmm. or so years, and it's definitely not been getting any better. And like, it doesn't come to mind. So I figure it's going to have to get worse before it gets better.
I'm just wondering that with a lot of the trade deals that are going on right now, whether copyright protections that are carved out as part of them are going to get worse. And I'm especially concerned about the EU. They haven't mandated this yet, I don't think. Okay, so yeah, it says we were successful in a multi-year effort to stop the EU copyright directive for mandatory upload filters. So I think they might have killed that. But I would not be surprised if someone tries to do something like that again. And I certainly would not be surprised if lobbying groups in the United States tried to go for that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And we've already had some concerning developments kind of in the area. Do you remember... I think it was SoftFFSA or something like that.
That sounds familiar.
Here, I'm gonna look it up real quick because I don't remember the actual name of it. Okay. Okay, so it was called FOSTA and SESTA. I managed to find this by putting in the cohort keywords sex worker internet. So do you remember this pair of laws? The Stop Enabling Online Sex Trafficking Act and the Fight Online Sex Trafficking Act?
I don't know.
So this pair of laws was used to shut down a sex worker website called Backpage. And how it worked is sex workers would use this website to advertise to clients, and also they would use information on there to filter out clients that were known as bad clients in their communities. And the thing is that it's a lot safer to find and vet clients this way than like working on the street. So these laws were passed as like an effort to stop child sex trafficking, but like they did not help and they only made things worse. So that, for example, and this was back in I think 2018 is when they went into effect.
Oh wow.
Yeah. It doesn't seem encouraging to me.
So they were meant to stop child sex trafficking, but they took down
a sex. That's exactly right. Now, to be fair, there were some children mm-hmm. that were being pimped out on this website, but that certainly wasn't like the primary use of this website. It was somewhat rare, and of course yeah. I'm pretty sure like law enforcement worked with Backpage to take these sort of things down. And the thing is it actually makes it harder to find sex trafficked children, because if it's not on like these websites, like it's just going to be underground.
Yeah. Where the fuck yeah. are you going to go look if it's not there?
And a lot of people took this as like a chilling effect on websites because they have to take a bunch of measures to prevent sex trafficking, and a lot of them err on the side of caution. Mm. So not great. And this affected like every single website. So like there used to be personals on Craigslist. There's not anymore because of these laws.
Oh, okay. Now,
yeah, like go to Craigslist right now.
Right. They got rid of the personals. Like, I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, like, yeah, there used to be, like, a whole personal section, and it's just not there anymore. And that was used by sex workers, too. Maybe not as much as Backpage, but I'm looking at it right now, and, like, I think the closest thing is, like, missed connections, which people kind of use sometimes.
Yeah.
So yeah, like it affected like kind of an online dating aspect of Craigslist. So it went that far because, you know, they had to err on the side of caution of these.
Right. Yeah. Of course they had to. That fucking
blows. The ACLU hated it. Sex workers were, God, I remember whenever these were coming up to be voted on, sex workers were just constantly saying, "Hey, this is going to fucking ruin everything. Don't do this." And despite all this opposition, it got passed because, you know, it's really difficult to vote against something that's at least on its face about sex trafficking, right?
Yeah, of course. Makes me wonder, like, it was probably written that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely yeah. the case.
Yeah, definitely.
I hate too. It here. Maybe just make sex work legal challenge.
Good fucking
lie. So things like recent developments like this, even though previous anti-piracy and that sort of thing laws have failed in the past, this one I feel like indicates like a swing in the other direction. So do you remember SOPA, for instance?
I remember okay. the name.
So SOPA was the Stop Online Piracy Act, and this was back in... Should really have the year first thing? Okay. So this was introduced in 2011, and they were able to stop this because it was going to lead to a bunch of internet censorship. But the thing is like, once you make it about the kids, you really can't stop it.
Yeah. Okay, so what was...
So SOPA was... So it says here on Wikipedia, the most reliable source on the internet, that it was to combat online copyright infringement and online trafficking in counterfeit goods. I don't know about you, but I love counterfeit goods.
I mean,
I guess I don't like counterfeit phone chargers. Those piss me off. Like, I guarantee, if you go on Amazon right now, you'll find phone chargers that are, like, branded as Apple and, like, Samsung phone chargers, but they are fake.
Oh, yeah.
I hate those. So, like, I wouldn't mind that, but, like...
Yeah.
I love the idea of being able to buy a knockoff Gucci bag from Alibaba.
Yeah, exactly. Or, like, when you say that, what immediately comes to mind is, like, fucking Neon Genesis Evangelion knockoff toys. Shit like that.
So pretty much what it would happen is you could request court orders to bar advertising networks and payment facilities from conducting business with infringing websites and web search engines from linking to websites and court orders requiring internet service providers to block access to websites.
Wow.
Yeah. So like you can actually get orders to block access to websites from ISPs in a bunch of European countries. And of course it's easy to circumvent, but it's disgusting to think that you could get a court order to effectively shut down access to a website because of a supposed infringement. And the thing is not every website has the legal power behind them to counter a claim like this.
Yeah. Yeah, of course not. There's so many fucking websites out there that aren't Twitter, Reddit, all that bullshit.
And the thing is, it's already bad enough that we have, like, basically four websites now.
God, I know. And they're all shitty websites.
You know, that's a thing that we should touch on real quick. Twitter got stories and it sucks.
Yeah, you know, I was going to mention it earlier. Your tweet, you brought up a really good point. And don't fucking interact with them if you don't like them.
Well, I mean, like, a bunch of people are using the feature. They're called Fleets, which is the worst fucking name. A bunch of people were using the feature to complain about it. And I'm like, quit doing this. If you interact with it, that's a metric for them to keep it around.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Like, I don't know about you. I was using them to announce when I was
okay. That's a good use. That's funny.
Just for, yeah. There you go. It was just for humor, but like,
yeah. Like I don't want stories in every fucking app I use. Like they have video streaming on Reddit now. Honestly. Why?
Because it's fucking Reddit. I mean, like the fucking I get like the Reddit live shit, but why can't I? Fuck, what did you
okay so like the top of like Reddit Live was literally a guy like topless dancing to pop music and I'm like why is this front and center in this website that's supposed to be about link sharing?
Yeah, it's a fucking like news
basically every website's becoming the fucking same because people are convinced that like all the Snapchat features are good.
Yeah, it's
like stories made sense in Snapchat, but once they started adding them to Instagram and like Facebook Messenger as well, it's just like, why does every website need to have this shit? And then like well past all that discourse, Twitter finally decides to add it in instead of like dealing with basically any problem that people want them to deal with on their website.
There's like literally so many fucking things Twitter could have done instead of
stories. Yeah. Like, maybe deal with the harassment that's rampant on your fucking website, dorks.
Honestly, or add
a like the edit button. How long have people been clamoring for a fucking edit button?
How long is
Twitter? 2007-ish.
Over 10 years now? It's just like, it's what really pisses me off about that is Twitter will fucking make jokes
just
about it.
Just bring Vine back. Just bring Vine back.
Fuck. Bring Vine back.
Like, if you want video content that badly, just fucking bring Vine back, you losers, you dweeb.
Honestly. Why do we use this
website? Okay, so out of the big websites, like, Twitter is, like, the least bad to me. That's why I use it.
Yeah.
That's where everyone is, and it's, like, kind of the simplest because it's primarily text-based. That's why I use it. But I've also been increasingly using forums that my friends run to talk with them instead.
Oh God,
Web 2.0 was all we needed. Web 3.0 was a mistake. And I will call back to the first episode. If your website has more than 10,000 users, it should not fucking exist. Shut it down.
You know, I agree. There is just, like, I think this is especially a thing on Twitter. Like, where you look at the What's Happening bar on your right side and you see, like, four fucking trends from Minecraft YouTubers.
I'm just gonna say it. No more trends. There's no reason for, like, K-pop stans to be able to go into every fucking hashtag and make it impossible to find out what's going on. Yeah, that's fine. This is racist. You can do that. But like if there's like a YouTuber who's canceled, please stop posting fan cams. I want to know what happened.
Yeah, just tell us what happened. I don't care what this boy in Korea did.
Yeah. And, like, the thing is, if you're on a forum, like, people are compartmentalized by interest, so you don't have, like, brigading nearly as often. And also, they're, like, usually pretty well moderated. Mm-hmm. Yeah, websites need moderation-first users. Like, you don't need more than 10,000 people. You can't manage that.
No.
I mean, clearly, I'm just... They're all becoming content aggregators where people fight with each other. That's it.
Honestly, that's it. That's literally just it. Like, look at any website.
And I mean, like, at least with a forum, like, people are sharing content, of course, but they're actually having discussion. It facilitates discussion, which is what the point of a website is to me.
Yeah. It's like going in the fucking Scroll King and posting a picture or like a tweet from Fortnite.
Yeah.
And everyone talks about it. It's like,
the forum websites are terrible. Yeah.
They are.
And I'm honestly hoping that we see a lot more regulation of websites in that regard rather than clamping down on fucking copyright stuff.
Yeah. Trying to ban porn. Like,
God, we really went on a tangent. Yeah.
Maybe I'm for it. I will gladly sit and I shit on four websites any day.
Do you have? Oh, there's one more thing that we should touch on. I know we keep saying this. Did you hear about the new YouTube thing? YouTube's fucking with ads.
What do they do now?
Yeah. So they had an update to the terms of service. They're going to make it to where you pretty much can't run a channel without ads anymore.
Awesome. So
So if you're too small for the YouTube partner program, YouTube has now decided that they will roll ads on your shit and make money off of it anyway without you. And potentially this means that... if your channel's demonetized, they can still run the ads anyway and collect the money, and you get none of it.
That fucking sucks, dude. Like,
they
just...
Well, and the thing is, they're the only game in town. Where else are you going to upload your video? Daily Motion? Are you, huh? Are you going to go...
No.
Are you going to go upload a video on your Vimeo? I don't know what that voice was.
Nothing could... It's good.
It's the only one that has, like, a broad monetization scheme so people can actually make money off their shit. But now, like, like, if you're not even a partner, they're just going to make money off of you and it doesn't matter? They're going to demonetize you but still make money because you don't matter?
Surprise, but it sucks. Someone said fuck in their video because YouTube gets all the money now.
And the thing is, they have a fucking monopoly on online video. This should not be allowed. And honestly, I mean, this is why I've seen creators on YouTube start making their own streaming networks. So, for example, a bunch of educational YouTubers I like, such as Wendover Productions and Lindsay Ellis and Tom Scott, they started their own streaming service called Nebula, where they get subscription money and they post like stuff on there without YouTube getting in the way.
You know, I'm fucking for that.
I think we're going to see more of that in the future as YouTube continues to make their website worse and worse for creators.
Yeah. It's already started. People are pissed off and they're going to move to wherever they can. Unfortunately, I don't think people are going to be as successful in creating offshoots like Nebula.
It's only going to be the big people who survive, which channels. Is unfortunate.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. It sucks. Like, what's some other YouTuber I kind of watch is doing it. Linus Tech Tips. They're doing they have like their own.
Do they?
YouTube competitor.
This is news to me.
I think it's called It's called Float Thing. I don't know what the hell.
Well, I mean, it says a lot about YouTube and what they're doing that people are trying to move away from it, which would be previously unthinkable.
Yeah, honestly, like, go back 5-6 years ago and YouTube was like, it was the top of its game then, and it was not as bad
from memory. I didn't know that Linus Tech Tips ran like a real ass forum. This is interesting.
Yeah, they have like a huge ass forum.
I love that.
Like, it's honestly like the last forum I can think of.
Yeah.
Besides like something.
Okay,
like,
yeah, I see Float Plane now.
I don't know if that counts.
This kind of like seems like here, I'm loading it up so I can actually see what it is. What is Float Plane?
I might have just completely misunderstood what it is, but I'm pretty sure it's supposed to be like a
So I see like a few. This seems like this is primarily tech right now.
Yeah.
So it's so people can support creators, which is interesting. But yeah, it says a lot about YouTube that people are trying to shift away from it, which is extremely difficult. Where else are you going to go?
Where else are you going to go?
God.
The answer is nowhere.
Do you have a favorite thing from this week? We should end with that. Okay. I actually did not come prepared earlier. Okay, can I say one of my favorite things before I get to like the actual favorite thing? Are you familiar with the rave classic Shooting Star? Yes.
It was like a big meme a few years ago, right?
Okay, that so it's been in like a lot of AMVs. Right. It's a song that everyone's heard, right? I think. Like, you know the lyrics.
I hope. Probably.
I'm pretty sure you do.
I'm looking up this now.
Here, I'm just gonna go for the bit. Like, it so the lyrics are like a shooting star across a midnight sky, wherever you are, you're going to see me fly.
Yeah.
You know that song.
Yes, yeah.
Everyone definitely knows this song, right?
I think so, yeah.
I sang it to Dylan and he said he had never heard this fucking song. I see the thing is he insisted, and the thing is like sometimes he'll like jokingly do this. He genuinely did not recognize this song. I don't know how that's possible.
That's hard to believe for anyone, but especially for him.
Yeah, like if you were a heavy online internet user like us, like him, you know this song. So that blew my mind. That was like one of my like the funniest things to me recently. Have you found something that's like your favorite?
Can I like jerk myself off for a second?
I'll allow it.
To phrase it. I'm working on so you know how we have like we post our little Septipus comics and shit. I'm working on a little like congregation site for that. And
excited for this. Tell me.
You know, you post we create the comics and then we upload them to the site through an API I've written. And then you can go to the web interface and it'll list them all out in a clean and nice looking way. It's like the Scroll Game Twitter, but you know, as a website, kind of.
Okay, so are you going to make this to where just anyone can create their own comic site for this? Or is it just for us for now?
It's open source, so you can run your own, but it's like the way I'm doing it is the website is completely read-only. It's all like uploading to it is through a Discord bot.
Oh, okay. So that's really neat. Because a lot of people use the Septipus bot to make these comics.
I don't know who else besides us is going to use it, or besides me, but it's there.
I can think of one person already. Yeah. So do you have like a GitHub repo for that people can look at?
Actually, it's github.com/coomics, COOMICS.
Okay. Well, and we'll link that, of course. Okay, so I think I have a genuine, like, favorite thing as well. Are you familiar with Nancy Pelosi, like, kind of doing a reboot on live TV where she just says good morning Sunday morning? Okay, so there's, like, an interview she's doing, and, like, she doesn't respond to the question, and it looks like she just has a vacant look on her face, and then she just says, good morning, Sunday morning. And there is a Twitter bot that, like, has put this into a video where it's Nancy Pelosi's face on a sun. And every Sunday it says, good morning, Sunday morning. I'm going to link this video to you right now.
I've seen you retweet this. I just didn't really...
Okay, yes, but I'm going to link it to you so you can, like, visualize this.
This is really good. And it just tweets this.
Are you going to be okay?
Yeah, I've been much worse. It just tweets this every Sunday.
Yep. Every Sunday morning, you get Nancy Pelosi. That's one of my favorite things.
Look on her face.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, you want to call it there?
Send it on that note.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening to another episode of Non-Binaries. I'm going to try to edit this quickly so it doesn't come out, like, super late again. Nobody listens to this podcast. It's fine. And if you listen to this podcast, thank you for listening to this podcast that nobody listens to. All right. All right. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.